The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning, welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes or so, talking about gambling addiction and addicts like myself. Joining me, as always, from Epic Risk Management, Dan Trelauer. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Craig. I'm great. Good to hear from you. Good to be with you again. And how are you doing today?
Doing great. And happy to have Christine on with us today. Christine, like Dan and myself, a gambler in recovery. Christine, good morning. How are you?
I am wonderful. Good morning, both of you.
Really appreciate you taking some time to share your story with us. So let's get right into it. How long has it been since your last wager?
December 16th of 2017.
Oh, great. So working on 5+ years. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes.
How old were you when you first got exposed to gambling?
Born.
Okay.
You know, I was, you know, late 70s, early 80s kids. So, you know, it wasn't anything, you know, parents take you to the bar and give you the scratch off to keep you busy. You know, my aunt and my grandma would take me to bingo with them.
Sure.
And while they're playing the paper cards, I'm playing the boards, you know.
Right.
It was accepted then.
And was there a moment when you look back in your life with clarity where, I don't know, maybe as a teenager or even a young adult, where you felt like a pull towards it, or you got great joy out of it, or even had a big win, or just found yourself, you know, gravitating towards more gambling than less?
Yes, I was gravitating more than less from the time I turned 21 and went there when I first went to Atlantic City.
Okay.
That was my 21st birthday. And then it was, you know, then it was fun. Then it was exciting, you know, brand new. My aunts were always going down. My grandparents, you know, would go down. I'd go to racetracks with them. It was accepted. It was normal in my family.
Right.
I'm the oldest of 21 grandchildren.
Wow.
Yeah, and and out of all of them, you know, the baby pools existed. Even something just as simple as that, you don't think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, it's interesting because even though everyone's recovery is very unique, there is a lot of commonality amongst our stories about, you know, exposure to gambling and the normalcy of gambling. And I think it's important, Dan, that you just touched on that for a second, because we're not here to scare anyone. The majority of people can do it recreationally, responsibly. There's a small percentage of people like me and you and Christine that unfortunately go down a road that we unexpectedly find ourselves addicted to it. But it always starts off with some level of normalcy, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It starts off, we always used to say, it starts off as like a fun time. It starts off as this thing that puts families together, you know, unites, you know, mom with dad and daughter and family and grandparents and all this. It's just fun. And it's you know, addiction itself, it doesn't start as addiction. It starts as fun, and then it becomes a habit. And then it becomes this thing that we start to do a little bit more oftentimes, and maybe we're preoccupied with it, and maybe it's solving a problem in our life. That's when it's starting to be misused. You know, gambling is a form of entertainment, but when you start to use it to maybe deal with some stuff in life that you don't know how to deal with, that's when it starts to become problematic. And we might hear that in this journey. But yeah, it always starts off as just kind of innocent fun.
All right, so Christine, so you're 21, you're now able to go to casinos on your own and with your friends. So you're doing it, it's fun, it's great, it's awesome, you're having a good time, have a couple drinks maybe while you're there, and then walk me through kind of the progression for you from that point on.
No problem. So I began a career in law enforcement. I was an emergency dispatcher after graduating high school. This is back in 1996. I became an EMT at that time as well. I kept up my dispatching career. Right after, in 2006, I began as a 911 call taker in my county. After Superstorm Sandy, I went to Fire Department Training Academy, and I became a certified firefighter. And by this time, I was 36, and I became treasurer of said fire department.
Got it.
And I became the treasurer, but all I wanted to do was escape. I'm working full-time hours plus. putting in my time at my fire departments, and I wound up taking $52,000 from my fire department.
All right, let me stop you. Let me stop you there, because there's a lot of water under the bridge before we get to there.
So, as
you're working in what's very clearly a high stress environment as a dispatcher, as a 911 call taker, obviously going to your firefighter school and all that, did you use gambling as an outlet to combat the inherent stress of those jobs? Was it a release for you?
Yes.
Got it.
Yep. I would go. I would just go. No one knew what I was doing. I'd be the big shot, bring the friends down, but it was just to get rid of them.
And then prior to stealing the money from the firefighters, you obviously must have gone through your own money and had financial issues prior to that because of the gambling, yeah?
That is correct. It just progressively got worse as I had access.
Did you go through a process of borrowing money, friends and family, lying about why you needed the money, you know, maxing out credit cards and things like that?
Always. But again, it was hidden for me. I thought I was doing a good job hiding it.
Got it.
And
just wondering, like, before you get to the place, because what a lot of people don't understand is, you know, a rational... You know, normal person obviously doesn't steal money from anybody. But, you know, we think irrationally because we're so desperate to either pay off a gambling debt. And in a lot of times, this is, I think, very hard for non-gamblers or non-compulsive gamblers to understand this. And Dan, I want to bring you in here before we get, you know, to the nitty-gritty of Christine's story. A lot of times when people like us make the irrational decision financially, whether it's in this case stealing money from a fire department, borrowing money, lying about it, whatever it might be, it's not always to pay off a debt. I think there's this misconception that, well, we got ourselves in trouble financially, we're in debt, we can't pay our bills. And while that does happen in many cases, sometimes people make these irrational decisions just to have money to go gamble with, and it's not to pay off some kind of debt.
100%. You know, money changes value for a gambler, and we've talked about that before. And you know Christine and I have some similar background, and Craig and all three of us, we've spent that time away, we've gotten to the pits of the gambling where it's gotten really bad, where we've done things that we look backwards and say, wow, you know, what was I thinking? But in the midst of it, I'm taking money as a financial planner for my clients, not to pay off debts all the time, was to stay in action.
Right.
For me, money only meant that I could stay in action longer and I didn't have to deal with the crap in my life. So it was total avoidance. And, you know, first responders, that's high stress situation, and people that are at call centers, you know, you're using the gambling as that outlet instead of, you know, drugs or alcohol. You know, gambling fills that same void. There were times that I didn't pay off any debts. I just wanted to keep gambling. I agree.
Right. So, Christine, I guess for you, and I really do appreciate you sharing the story because it's fascinating to me. When you ultimately made the decision, I imagine you didn't steal it all at once. It's probably over time.
It was a year and a half.
Right, because, you know, you take a little bit of first, see if you get away with the kind of thing, I suppose.
Pay it back.
Right. Was it to pay off debt, or was it, like Dan and I are saying, to give you a chance to remain in action?
It was to let me definitely pay my bills, but to keep me in action. I felt like if I was in action, as long as I left the casino with some money.
Right.
Whether it was just a quick ATM withdrawal or as long as I left, I felt like I was accomplishing something.
Got it. So at first, when you quote unquote borrowed money from the firefighter's account that you were the treasurer of, you did pay it back. So you felt good about that, I suppose.
I went to originally, like, you could see me paying it back and putting the money back in, mm-hmm. but it was just obvious. Like, I was legitimately putting into the QuickBooks system. ATM withdrawal, Atlantic City. ATM withdrawal, Atlantic City. Like, these were actually in there. And in the year and a half it took, the day I made my last bet was the day I found out I was being investigated, but I still went to Atlantic City anyway that day.
And that's the thing people don't get. Like, you know you're being investigated. You know you're in trouble. You know you're doing the wrong thing. You know it's going to blow up at some level in your brain. You just know it. And yet the pull is so great, you can't stop yourself from doing it. I can obviously relate to that. I lived that life for sure. I wonder for you, I do want to get to the good stuff here in a moment. You know, I know there's so much we're glossing over here, and we only have a limited amount of time to talk to you right now today. Prior to that, prior to, you know, stealing money over the course of a year and a half, did anyone in your life ever come to you and say, hey, Chris, you know, you don't seem to be yourself, or hey, you're not, you know, coming out with us socializing anymore? Or, you know, was there anyone ever challenge you on what was going on in your life, or no?
Honestly, at the time, I can say no. People, you know, like people that I was regularly around, it was actually one of my aunts noticed that something was off because she would usually go with me.
Right.
And she noticed that something was off, but nobody could pinpoint exactly what it was. So the answer totally would be no, not really.
Right. Right, because you become a world-class liar and you hide it very well. And as long as you got your job and they think you're paying your bills and you seem okay, why follow up on that? So I get that. Before we take a break, I do want to ask you, how did you ultimately find out that you were being investigated? And for you, what was that, you know, bottom of the barrel moment? Were there police waiting for you outside your house? Did you get arrested? If you don't mind sharing the story that led you to ultimately get the help that you got.
Oh, no problem. So, yeah, it was all on the day that I made my last bet. That morning, prosecutors showed up at my door. They showed up at my door. They weren't saying I was arrested or anything. They just wanted to talk. And although this is usually the point where you get that lawyer,
right.
I knew I was caught. I was done. Like, I knew why they were there. I even asked them, I said, you know, do I have to make arrangements for my dogs? And they're like, no, you're coming home. So they were very... I was just cooperating.
Sure.
There was nothing left for me to do. Like, you're done, you're caught.
So basically they're like, look, we got you. You know we got you. Don't make this harder than it has to be.
Exactly. And being, you know, the person that I am deep down, you know, okay, honesty. Here's what I did. No, I wasn't helped and whatever came along with that. I was looking at 3 to 5 years in prison for being a... public official, like a police officer, you know, we're held to the higher standard that we know better.
Wow.
So,
when they walk you through that, you know, that's a wake up call for sure. Yeah. How did you respond to that? And ultimately, you know, did you serve any time? And how did that work itself out?
Yes, I actually got a 3 with a 2. So I was in Clinton for. 2009, I got a 3 with a 2. So I had to do 2 years in, state prison. And I was there, in 2020. So I had COVID while I was there. It was a horrifying experience.
Sure.
As you know.
Yep.
They just knew, like, it's not where I want to be again. So
no.
prior to going in, I did self-exclude myself from 5 different states.
Got it. So let's take a break because I know
okay.
We have to take one, and then we'll get back into that. We're talking to Christina D'Anchilaro. It is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. D'Anchilaro, Epic Risk Management, of course. And Christine joining us, telling a story about gambling addiction and where it led her, which is prison, which Dan and I can obviously both relate to. So you get 2 years you have to do, with good time, I suppose, maybe a couple months off that 21 months or thereabouts in state prison. Based on your background, were you in protective custody or were you in what most people refer to as Gen Pop and have to deal with the realities of being a law enforcement person behind bars?
Yes, I was in general population when I got to state. When I got to state prison, obviously on the county level, you know, I had to stay there for a couple of days before I went to Clint. So for those couple of days, I was just automatically in general population. It was surreal. I'm used to being on. I don't want to say the side, but you know, I'm used to working and being around law enforcement, and it's my family, and it's what I grew up, and it's what I knew. So corrections officers in there were, to me, it was like, oh, you know, these are people that I related to because I used to work with them.
Right.
But now here I am in a situation where that can't happen because it's just going to cause more problems.
No, and for people to know, like, this is real. Like, it's I don't want to, you know, it's not movie real, but it's real life. Like, you go in, if you're talking to corrections officers, you got a problem with the other inmates. There's no doubt about that.
Right. Somehow, some way, you're talking too much or too little.
Yeah.
Whatever the case was. But so, no, I did. I got through it. I ended up getting COVID, which got me, instead of January of 2021, a release date, I got November of 2020 because I had COVID and got sent home on home confinement.
Got it. Got it.
And
so,
that was the whole experience, as you can
see. Yeah. You don't want to have, you don't want to be sick at all when you're in the Bureau of Prison System. It's not a good place to need health care, for sure. Which is another story for another day.
Yes, exactly.
But it sounds though to me, though, you had committed yourself to not gambling prior to going away, yeah?
Yes. And yes, I was in the rooms for over, I wanted my year in before I went.
And was it cold turkey? Were you able to, once, you know, reality slapped you in the face, were you able to then just stop gambling, or was there still a trial and error part of that?
No. There was absolutely none. I knew what I was facing. So, I would do my meetings because I had time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would do meetings every day of the week. I would just go, 90 meetings, 90 days, and it's still there if you want it, right?
Yep.
So,
and then I wonder if, and if you don't mind sharing this part of it, no. When the men and women that were your colleagues at the fire department found out that you had stolen $52,000 from their coffers, I wonder, like, how they reacted to that, and if any of those people are still in your life today.
Yes, it changed dramatically, but the people that are in my life still today were, I did have, you find out where your real support is real quick.
Right.
Yep. But, yes, my best friend, we've known each other for 42 years. Her father was the chief at that time. So she said, you didn't hurt me. You didn't hurt my children. People make mistakes. So that was kind of what I got from the people that mattered where I was. They supported me, wrote to me. And then there's those that didn't. And they may never forgive me. And, there's nothing I can do about that.
Nope.
Just do the next right thing and... So that's what I do. So the day that I found out I was being investigated, went talked to them. I came back, had already had plans scheduled with my girlfriends at the time. They were going to use, comps to buy Christmas presents at that time. So we were planning on going. So we went, and I went there, and I put the money in the machine. And something didn't feel right. It clicked. And I was like, no, and I took it out. So... My last bet, 12, 16 of 17, that date is just all-inclusive. I got home from Atlantic City that night in our trip, and I took a picture in my phone because I called 1-800-GAMBLER myself.
Wow.
And I was given an amazing therapist, then it led to me getting a psychiatrist, and it led to me finding out a lot about myself that I just didn't know. It snuck up. My last grandparent had passed away at that time. This was all in that time period where it just started to get bad.
Yeah, and I want to be clear to people listening. Christine's not making excuses for the behavior. She's just acknowledging that part of the journey was some self-discovery along the way. It doesn't excuse what she did, what I did, what Dan did. But if you're committed to recovery, you might find things out about yourself, not even bad things necessarily. But you learn a lot about who you are, and it sounds to me like that's a positive aspect of this journey that you went on.
Yes, definitely. And 5.5 years later, I now work for the council.
Wow. So you work for the New Jersey Council, which is 1-800-GAMBLER, yeah?
Yes.
Which is great. I mean, it shows you're paying it forward now, and you're using your life experience to help people who obviously need it. Like, we all were there. Different stages of our lives, that day one when you desperately pick up the phone and you recognize that, it's more powerful than we are and, I need help. Unfortunately, the majority of people that pick up the phone pick it up way too late. You know, and that's a reality of addiction that, you know, you're kind of forced into making the call, forced into asking for help. But as long as you pick the phone up and you have somebody who you can't BS, who's walked a mile in your shoes, that call becomes arguably the most valuable call of your life. I wonder, considering your background in law enforcement and how afraid you had to have been to be locked up, was there ever the thought of, I'm not waking up tomorrow, that's the easiest way out, or no?
I didn't have that specific. Mine was more the emotional, the not sleeping at night. It was keeping me up at night, wondering if today's the day. I think those consumed, that kind of thing consumed my mind more than anything. Like the what if, what is going to happen? When is it going to happen? Like I'm waiting for it.
Right.
And then it just came upon me. And now to look back, you know, the best thing I ever personally did for me was, you know, deterring myself from going with, you know, with the self-exclusion.
Yeah, Dan, I always say that to, especially young adults that I try to counsel now, that you're, I know you're aware of, but for the audience's sake, you're, every day I talk to young guys about gambling, or, you know, relatives that you reach out and ask me to, you know, to share my story, because of being a public figure and people, I guess, respecting my honesty about my experience. You know, I get asked, as you know, to talk to a lot of young guys who are sports fans, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, just listening to Christine, you know, just bring back a flood of memories for me. But what I always say, and please, Dan, if I'm wrong, you know, correct me, because I don't give out bad advice. When I talk to young guys, the first thing I ask them is if they have self-excluded. Because it takes all 5 minutes on, you know, the New Jersey website to self-exclude. And that goes globally from a standpoint of wagering online. And if the answer is no, in my heart, I know they're not ready to stop. If the answer is yes, I feel like that's a major accomplishment and hill to climb. And those are the young guys that I find, in my experience at least, are the ones that are going to get help and are going to fight to conquer it. I feel like if you're not willing to self-exclude, there's not a lot I can do for you because you're not ready to stop.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, the self-exclusion is interesting because it's more effective for online than in person, right?
Right.
Any one of us can walk into a casino and we can figure out how to work the system.
Not just that, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I've told this story before many times. I self-excluded, and a week later, I got a letter from an Atlantic City casino acknowledging that I self-excluded from online wagering, inviting me to come in person.
Yeah, and that's the problem, right? And that's part of the issue that we see is from a marketing perspective. And those things are being improved and need to continue to be improved. But addressing your point, Craig, you're right. You know, I talk to a lot of young people, right? They don't gamble. They only bet on sports. That's, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that sentence, I'd probably be paying a lot more of my restitution. So it's the young college kids don't see sports betting as gambling. They just don't. And so when they can take that step to self-exclude, yeah, that does say, that speaks volumes for what they're, how hungry are they? Because it's a hard thought to think that I'll never be able to gamble again. I remember when I was first found out, and Christine, you and I have talked before, and our story is somewhat similar in terms of being found out and going to prison and just that anxiety, and just like all of us have felt. But, you know, it's self-exclusion is one of those steps you take because you don't want to suffer and feel that way. And in the moment, that's what online gambling is. It's about blocking that ability to log on in the moment. And online self-exclusion is so powerful for a young emerging adult with developing brains. They just need that block. They need that extra braking system in place so that they don't make that mistake again. You know, so I wouldn't say you're wrong, Craig, at all. I would say that's a really good step to take because you can tell how motivated
yep.
they are.
All right, Christine, before we let you go, because we're up against it here a bit, you know, I like to end it with the positive. You know, it's been more than 5 years since you last wagered. You work for the New Jersey Council on Compulsive Gambling, which is amazing. As you know, there are a lot of people listening right now, or loved ones of people listening right now, that are at that, you know, step one, day one. Walls are caving in. They don't think they can ever get out of the problems they're facing right now, financially, relationship-wise, et cetera. And they can't possibly imagine, you know, not gambling. What advice do you give somebody that's in that spot where it seems overwhelming in the moment, and let them know that they can beat it, they can come out the other side and have a life worth living?
Absolutely. just stay positive. I mean, this is positivity for me. Every day I get up and I look for one thing to be happy about for that day, that moment, that second. And I can always find something. And to believe in your support. A big thing is, you know, you may get support from where you least expect it. So not to disregard anything that could be a possible support for you and what you're working towards your program.
Well, listen, I'm very proud of you. I think it's great that here you are almost 6 years into your recovery and that you've dedicated your life now to helping people like you and me and Dan. I think it's great. I think more people need to share their stories, especially women, because most people don't even consider women as potential compulsive gamblers. And we all know that you're just as susceptible as men are. So I think it's great that you're lending your voice to it. And I appreciate you coming on and, you know, keep fighting the fight every day. And I'm glad to hear that you've come through it and that you're doing so well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. If you don't mind, can I just get a shout out to Ann Helen from you?
Please go ahead.
My Aunt Helen, she listens all the time.
Well, let me say hi to Aunt Helen, who I'm sure is being a big part of your recovery and loves you dearly.
Thank you, Dan.
And Aunt Helen, on behalf of Dan, it's Craig Carton saying thank you so much. We love you back, and we need more people like you in our lives. So God bless.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. Have a great one.
All right, take care. Be well.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, Dan, thanks so much, as always, for joining us. The show continues on as we are moving towards the start of football season, which I know for a lot of people represents the potential of wagering at levels that they normally don't, and fandom takes a hold of people. The NFL's king when it comes to that. Everyone knows. So as we move closer to football season, obviously we'll kind of guide people towards the types of behavior to be concerned about, not just with themselves, but also with their buddies, as more and more young people start wagering for the first time. So plenty of that stuff coming up in the near future. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, pal. And as always, appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. You have a great weekend, too, and I look forward to next week.
All right, that'll do it for Hello, My Name is Craig. Joe Beningo's coming up next. And then Monday, well, you don't get me, of course, but you have the return of Evan Roberts and Tiki Barber in afternoons and Sal Licata and Brandon Tierney in middays and Boomer and Geo in the morning and Keith McPherson and C-Mac and Loogie and everybody else. So enjoy the fam programming and very much appreciate the opportunity to continue. Hello, my name is Craig and this amazing platform on WFAN. We will see you again next weekend, as always, right here on WFAN. Have a great weekend, everybody.